You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Buongiorno.
And it's me, Brian. Tonight's episode, The Grateful Dead Part 2.
Ooh.
Episode 16 of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Golden Wind.
Hmm.
Anyhow, so, yes, despite what I thought, they've got through this arc post-haste.
Yeah, it was faster.
It doesn't feel rushed. I feel like they had enough time to do everything they needed to. So, yeah.
No, it was faster than I thought. I thought there was a bit more prosciutto v. Bruno, but it did. It was all a lot faster than I remember. A lot faster.
I guess you have less people explaining things, that kind of way.
Yeah, there's quite a long list on the wiki page of manga anime differences for this episode.
Yeah, because I'm almost certain that when Bruno and Prosciutto are clinging to the edge of the outside of the train, I don't recall Prosciutto falling into the underneath the rails, the gears of it, the wheels of it quite so quickly. I thought it was a lot more back and forth battle going on there.
Well, I'm most upset that Giono being woken up by Fugo and accused of eating Narancia's banana is omitted.
Damn it! How can they call this a faithful adaptation?
Yeah. I did hear one person on Twitter complain about that. It was the kind of thing that really amused them, that he was basically asleep for the entire fucking bit. which is a good joke, but yeah.
Okay, so yes, this episode, we left them flying out the side of the train through the zip that Pucciarati had made. In a suicide bid to save Trish and the rest of the gang.
It's his job to, from Predator's guide, it's also his job to complete the mission. He's gonna do this for the boys, even though he's the boss of the boys. He's got to play his part as well.
Yeah, he does compliment Bruno. He's like, oh, I underestimated you. Sorry about that. I thought you were a poor capo, but you're willing to put your life on the line. So, no, you're actually pretty good. But I got a guy with a fishing rod, so.
Yes, who just wakes up and manages to catch them with the hook of Beach Boy.
Hmm.
He catches him. He hooks it into his buddy's right hand. Yes, I was trying to remember which way it was what.
Very important for later.
Yes. Yeah. And so he's basically trying to kick Giorno off, because Giorno's just got his pant leg at that stage, isn't
Bruno.
It? Sorry.
I know you say the main character's name, but yeah, he's not in this.
He hasn't been in it for ages. Yeah, no, he's asleep inside a turtle.
He's
barely a
main character.
Well, I'm enjoying all these other boys, so that's fine.
Literally every other episode, because I know Bruno is the boss of the gang, but it feels that sometimes, even when the lads went to Pompeii against Man and Mirror, they're constantly going, what would Bruno do? What would Pucciarati do right now?
I mean, I wouldn't be too bad in calling this arc Bruno's Bizarre Adventure. That's fine.
Brew. Bro? I don't know.
Brew.
We'll shop that one.
Yeah. They're sort of hanging on to each other, dangling off the train. It's Six has told Pucciarati that the damage is reflected off the line.
In front of she's trying to...
He's dealt with it before, yeah.
Pucciarati is trying to... He's trying to attack Prosciutto, but as he's aging so quickly, his records are slowing down comparatively. But thinking about that, I can't hit you with an attack all at once from sticky fingers. But anybody who was holding on to the fishing line, anything that goes through that would be reflected back onto anybody who's standing it. So if I punch the fishing line with sticky fingers' ability, anybody who's caught in the line, i.e. Prosciutto, was going to get fall apart into a mess of zips then.
Yeah,
he doesn't have to hit him he doesn't have to hit him to hit him. He has to hit the fishing line to hit him. So even Prosciutto got kind of dodging out of the way because he's too old to hit him. So it's like, oh shit, okay, that still works. So he manages to unzip his hand, so he can take the hook out.
Yes.
And then zip it inside his own hand. Right? I think I got that right.
Yeah, he gets attached to his own hand. Cause that way Pesci knows that there was two people on the line and he's hoping.
Cause he could feel the weight of it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but then he feels that, the weight's changed. So he's like, oh, he's killed Bucciarati. Excellent. And then he suddenly dawns on him. Hang on, wasn't he on the right hand before?
Yeah, and he discovers this, like, based off the pinky finger. It's like, wait a minute, the pinky was on the was on the
wait
left of the line.
How do hands work? He's trying to figure that out. It's just like this roof zips open. Hey, what's up? It's me.
Yeah, it's not that it's Bruno. Like he can feel the difference in weight between them or anything. It's like, I'm aware of where a pinky is when I'm inside someone's hand. That kind of thing. It's very strange, but he's like, oh no. No, my bro is dead. And also that guy's attached to my fishing line and oh shit, I'm on my own. And oh shit, the guys are going to come out of that turtle and I'm super fucked. And as that, like, some guy whose hair and teeth have fallen out is working his way up the train and calling this guy a motherfucker for just being a weird looking dude who won't let him get to the conductor. Yeah. Cause he's like, hey, we got to stop this train. People are sick. My teeth are falling out. This is really weird.
Oh, I got to up my family name and face full life consequences for prosciutto. I got to be a man. I got to stop being a giant man baby. I got to be just
and
a man.
He figures that out when the guy starts aging again. It's like, oh my God, he's clinging on, like, literally like to what's left of him, onto the bottom of the train, just keeping his power going. Never don't let your power drop. Like he told me, I got to man up. I'm going to step on this guy's neck as practice. That this, wasn't so hard.
Yeah.
I can do it.
It is a super grim how Prosciutto was just all mangled up and under the train, but somehow
nasty.
Still alive.
Yeah, Like, I think what's worse is you don't really see much of his face or anything, but you do see, like, the Grateful Death kind of, like, poking out from underneath going, like, I'm okay. I'm okay for now. And that's already half a guy.
Me.
So that's how much of his users left. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, at this point, Bouchard is still on the roof. Because that's where he sees that he's still alive, crushed under the rail tracks. And then, yeah, then Pesci starts dragging him and then he has to zip through.
Inside the train.
The train. And then we get the bit where it's heading towards his heart and he does the old, I'll unzip myself into tiny, tiny pieces.
Well, he tries unzipping himself a little, but he just like, the hook keeps dipping in.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's like, I gotta unzip myself completely! And the bullet's just, number six. Is it number six? I think
it's number six.
Yeah,
number six is just freaking the fuck out. It's like, dude, that's, I don't know, I'm not a human myself, but surely you can't live with your heart, like, over there all the way across the room.
Well, your heart in two places across the room.
Well, yes, because that's when he realizes, oh no, my heart is still beating, so.
Because initially the hook goes for the other sleeping or dying passenger in the. Yes. The thing hooks his heart out and it starts going for his heart. So he has to hook it in two so it stops beating.
The second time this has happened in this franchise. Someone had stopped their own heart to evade the senses of their opponent.
it is an Iraqi mainstay that he does like.
Yeah. And so it looks like he's going to die, but Pesci annoys that he can't find Bucciarati anymore.
Well, then he's trying to find the brakes so he can get
smashes
get
the train up and stops the train.
Yeah. And by face, the two halves of his torso, of Bruno's torso, slide across the cabin and merge together again.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they were unzipped right beside each other and it was a big sort of train stall, that kind of thing. But it's just kind of like, oh, it's a good thing he pulled the brakes there because otherwise he'd be dead.
But number six, trying his best, is like, come on, Bruno, you gotta live. I'm only trying to put up, ma'am. I'm trying to push your.
I love this thing. It was just like, I'm only good at moving bullets. I can't move half of a heart.
But he's back, baby. He's like, yes, fate has decreed that I must survive this day. For the boys.
Yeah, and then they step out of the train and duel in front of the dying Prosciutto.
Yeah. Mm.
Love doing that. Just like, there's these close range, quick draw little, climaxes, sort of these stand fights.
They both kind of have like long range things to some extent. Yeah. It's pretty fun.
Hey, room on this train for the two of us. Are you sure? We have like a very different power sets, my share. I'm sure we could probably come to an agreement.
Mm.
Yeah, so Pesci manages to get his hook in Bucciarati's heart, but Bucciarati has managed to wrap the line of Beach Boy around Pesci's neck.
Because he uses his stand to grab his stand's line, because a stand can touch a stand, that kind of thing.
Yeah, this guy just yanks it around and this, like, you're thinking, oh, I've
no
got
powers
you.
Here, just gonna snap your neck with a fishing wire.
It's the old, I've got you, oh, at the end of my whip, everyone said, oh, is that right? Well, I actually got you, yoink, and then take a turn.
But that's not even the end of it, that's fucking, oh man, it's good stuff.
Yeah, again, Pesci made the mistake that Prosciutto warned him against at the very start.
Don't start gloating before they're dead. Start gloating. And then Bruno chastises him for it. He's like, dude, gloat when I'm dead. Fucking don't tell me your plan before you've killed me. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's pulled Trish out of Coco Jumbo.
And he has the Coco Jumbo in his hand. He's like, I'm going to smash this fucking turtle before I die. And then all your boys will be dead. It's kind of like another extra level of difficulty.
Well, yeah, but then Bucciarati just pummels him to death.
Yeah.
Him into tiny pieces.
Mm. Pretty nasty. He doesn't do the non-lethal unzipping of your body parts thing.
No. Throws him in a river.
Most of them. I guess he turned him into a lot of bits. It was hard to get all of them.
He was probably pretty handy on any kind of cleanup after a gang hit went down. Just take it all apart and put it into a wood chipper.
And then Trish is like asking Bucciarati if he'll answer her questions, and he goes through, well, no, our instructions don't necessarily, we don't necessarily have to answer any of your questions.
Well, you have to protect her, sorry.
And then she asserts herself and says, you will answer my questions. Why are all these weird things going on? And what's this? This giant claw print she's generated on the ground.
Hmm. And as Bruno suspected, it was like, oh, fuck. Yeah, I thought she'd have stand powers. Those do get inherited, so, yeah.
Yeah, this is kind of like the first time you've had it driven home that she's been dragged into this, because she has no idea who her dad is.
Hmm.
And, yeah, it's like, what's she done to deserve to be brought into this world of gangsters?
Super-powered gangsters.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And is it after the credits or just before the credits?
Just before.
They
have a few, there was a whole freeze frame to be continued, and then it's a few hours later by the train track at the side of the road, and we have another member of the hitman team. This important, what the fuck has happened here? The lads are long gone. They've abandoned the train and going to find some other transport to get them as far as Florence or Venice or wherever it was. I forget where the station was again.
It did kind of update itself, going like, yeah, he probably informed them that they were of our powers, that we were on the train, that we were hiding inside a turtle. So we got to come up with a new plan, because he says this while having a mobile phone. Not clear if it's one of theirs or one of his, but it's kind of like, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, this is Malone, and he's gathering all the stuff he needs to continue the pursuit. He has some samples of Bucciarati's DNA from the blood underground, which will be quite useful for his own stand power, and he's going to be the guy after him next. Babyface. Next episode.
Yes. Or what do they call it?
Baby head.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I was just like, stand that out there, fun. Where does the face belong? On the head. There you go.
a lot of fun.
Hmm. A lot of good stuff.
Hmm. Like, really, really fucking violent, actually, because even though, Bucciarati is the button guys, it's like, no, it's like doing a kind of style, it's like zipper moves as well, but at the end where he just fucking punches up Pesci and then zips him apart, you know, and then doesn't do it like,
I feel like he just switched off his zip power, so all of a sudden he's meaty chunks. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty nasty.
Also, just fucking twisting his whole head around using his own fishing line.
If it wasn't for the fact that he had such a thick neck in the first place, I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have survived that.
Yeah, that's been good, even having, like, just before with Purple Haze melting people, and it was also nice and gory.
Yeah, it's kind of leaning into that, which is fine.
Yeah, Babyface will be more on the body horror scale.
Hooray! Oh, dear.
Yeah, okay, yeah, we're back next week with episode 17, Babyface. And so now let's get into everything else we watched with the podcast within a podcast. Let's go! And we start on the Monday with Dororo, episode 3, the tale or the story of Jukai.
Yeah. So getting the backstory to him and to Yakimaru. And yes. What happened to him after he got pulled out of the river?
Turns out it was that mysterious guy who goes around putting on false limbs on people.
But you get a good chunk of Jukai's background even before we get to the Yakimaru part.
Yeah, yeah, that's a pretty horrifying fucking bit where he's like crucifying people, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just kind of like the hangman, I suppose. Like, gets the guy sent to him, he does his job, he nails him up. He's trying to be fucking of the Tasha on a mag from us as best he can anyway, but when someone's wife comes running down to try and save presumably her husband who's nailed up one of these things, she gets cut down as well, and he's suddenly shaken out at and struck by the horror of what he's apparently to, and just with his face in his hands walks up the edge of a cliff then.
Yeah, I can see that being as like just the, because initially it's like horrible, but then I was kind of reconsidering the bits where he was hammering one nail like through their chest kind of thing. It's like that one is a mercy, I think.
Yeah.
He's kind of going like, well, if someone else did this, they'd probably just leave them up there to die. I'm going to make sure I nail them so that they die quickly right now. And, but just that was the straw that kind of broke him.
Yeah. It was like he walked for this, Lord Chiba, who's apparently one extremely brutal to his enemies, and that's maybe he's trying to think of these guys or, fellas.
I think they were rebels, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, they faced us down like in armed combat. They're, you know, soldiers, this sentence hand down to them, but she didn't do nothing.
Yeah.
I can't put up with this any longer. I can't live in myself. But as we know, obviously he survived that. So then he,
But yeah, we have to find out how he survived it and became like a renowned, I suppose what we call it, like a
prosthetician?
Yeah. I was going to say, because he does some surgery, but he's mostly like got a big line where he, for free, replaces people's missing limbs and that kind of thing.
Mm. People seem to be getting a lot of disputes with samurai over this wandering around.
Hell land that they all live in.
Yeah, as is the law, the samurai can just chop you up without having to answer to nobody.
Yeah, so it's not even disputes, is it? It's just a samurai gets a new sword and goes, I want to find out how sharp this new sword I bought is. Hey, child.
Yeah.
Come here and be sliced up. And then he's got an assistant. He then hears some rumors about his teacher. And, yeah, he's got a conflict because it was like, oh, you were part of the army that raised my village and caused me to lose my leg.
His father died as well.
Yes, there's nothing you can do to atone for your sins, but I'll stay here and help this kid.
Yeah, the guy is like, oh, you're going to plead for your life, and it's like, no, literally a kid just came earlier, and I have to train him, and he's prosthetic, and you can kill me after that, like, it's fine, I don't care.
The disciple is more disgusted, he returns the prosthetic leg that Duke gave to him and just fashions a crutch for himself and just goes off in his own way. Was saying, I don't want to be here no more.
He can't really justify killing this guy who's doing good for people, but he can't justify not killing him and using his prosthesis. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you reading that he's the body that he finds at the end of the episode?
I wasn't.
Oh yeah,
like
shit! That's the same leg, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly.
That makes sense.
I was wondering why, it was even though it was kind of odd, I was thinking, I swear I could have seen that false leg before somewhere, and it's probably then.
But, it kind of fits into his thing, his story from that point. He feels like he doesn't deserve to live, but he's trying to do the best he can in the world. And, it's at kind of at that point where his disciple left him. And he sort of, he just falls down into a riverbank and just fucking goes like, I'm just gonna sleep.
By the divine providence of Buddha. He fell down that hill.
Okay, fine.
Because there's a little altar by the side of the road and this Buddha going, you know, is like going,
whoop.
Just takes you're gonna find your purpose in life now, motherfucker.
Yeah, and he finds a mysterious no skin baby in a book. Yeah.
But it sucks his finger, so he knows that he wants to live.
Yeah, because it's not crying or anything, as they said before.
Yeah.
So, but it has a will to live. Yeah.
Yeah. As much as I like this episode, and we get all the stuff with him growing up, and I was like, by the time we got to present day, and we got Dororo and the Loot Priest back, I miss their character designs throughout this episode, because there's not so much of the cartooniness of the character designs.
Nah, it's just kind of a very
serious
autobiography. Actually, it's in black and white for the majority, yes. But as you get closer to present time, there's a little more color added in here and there.
It's like it kind of goes from black and white to sepia and stuff, and it keeps the color of the soul thing.
Yeah, and we see that he sees other non-living materials, but like natural materials.
Yeah, like green. He sees plants as green. He can see the trees and everything. That's, and it also like he can see his own prosthetic arms because they're made of wood. So yeah.
And Jukai obviously appears as a white spirit. Then that's the only other one besides Dororo who's
around him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking the tragedy of that, because I was like, he didn't even know who this fucking guy is, or does he kind of know him to see his soul, that kind of thing? I'm not entirely sure. No, it seems kind of tragic, though.
Yeah, I mean, from his thoughts we saw from the previous episode, it's kind of, I think we get, he didn't really know what it was, but he knew that it stood by him for all that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's really like in the future, he has more context. It's like, oh, that was a different guy. And he fucking basically, like, now he has the context for realizing that was a guy who raised me or something? Was that what it was trying to play as, or?
No, I think it's just, I think he's just relating Dororo to his experience with Jukai. It's like, Dororo's one of these white beings who means him no harm, but is following him around. And there's only one time that's happened.
I was wondering, like, was it him having a second with Dororo being the second one to start following him around? Did that give him a new context for the first one, is what I mean?
I don't know. I just think,
because it's difficult to try and figure it out, because he obviously views the world in a very abstract way.
As we get to right at the end of the episode.
Because when they have their partying at the end, he is... We don't know what kind of person this is besides it not being a threat to him, but he's trying to imprint and remember what this presence was, because he's trying to like feel his face and trying to engrave that sensation in his memory, so that if he comes across it again, he wants to, he'll know who they are.
Yeah,
it's the question of how long they'll hold off giving him his voice back. As I say, in the manga, he's got his voice back pretty much as soon as you see him.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, you know, besides organs, this, sensations and things were taken away as well, because he gets back his sense of pain, this.
Yeah, because you see in the flashback that basically his presence around 6 years old was starting to attract monsters. And so we get like the mirror of him being trained to fight by Jukai, and his brother being trained, but not really. It feels like the teachers are...
It feels like, oh, you got me, young master, that kind of thing. Yeah. I'm the best fighter in the world, daddy! You know, it's like the complete fucking inversion of it. It's like, I need to teach you how to fight because you don't have any arms and legs and can't see and shit, and monsters want to get you. So it's a very different upbringing that himself and his brother are having, yeah.
Yeah, and then eventually one of these demons turns out to be one of the 48. One who looks like Alien versus Predator decided not to fight and fall in love, and this is their love child.
Pred-alien, yeah.
I was thinking that with the long head, alright, yeah.
It's more kind of like the sort of flaps of fangs that kind of all just blossom out from its face.
Yes. Mm.
Is that the one with that's the one with the sticky long tongue as well?
Yes.
Yeah. There was a lot of cool monster designs in this one, so I was like, ooh, that one's nice.
Bears mentioned that Yakimaru's chopping these things up with a wooden sword.
For so fucking long. It's so badass. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like when Jukai sees the state of the sword after he's come back from killing one of them, he's like, yeah, I better make him a real sword.
But he questions that then as well, like, yeah. Because he, that Hyakkimaro, he has this instinct, this, this prodigious, like combat ability, and you see this, it's important to him as well, because, you know, if these demons are going to be always after him, I should kind of, try and prepare him for that, but am I doing the right thing here again?
Even as he's letting him go, he's kind of berating himself. He can't forgive himself entirely. It's like, yeah, you know, I tried to do right by you and raise you and shit, but all I did was teach you how to kill, so good job, me.
You like, know, I'm thinking, this was to protect you, because you have a unique set of circumstances here, was by like, doing this and by making you prosthetics with putting hidden swords on them. Am I just like fashioning you into some kind of killer as well, maybe worse than I could be? Or is this like, all I wanted for you was to have a kind of a quiet life, you to kind of just survive and thrive, but you have to be able to defend yourself as well. I feel
that's all before though that his leg grows back. I think after his leg grows back, and that's when he makes the sword, you don't get any more of those thoughts from that point on.
You have to guess for the most part.
From that point on, I think he realizes why he was in the state he was in before.
So it's something like, he killed a demon, he grew a leg back. It's like, okay, so you need to go kill demons to...
Yeah, someone somewhere gave all your body parts away to get power from demons.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, at that point he's figured it out. And then, because what he says when he goes is, I can't come with you, I'll only be in your way. He hasn't got his regrets at that point.
You're right. Yeah.
It's the regrets are all up to the point. Because before that he's like, I wish I could have protected him from this life, but I think it slowly dawns over those years as he's growing up that this life was going to find him out anyway, regardless.
Yeah, especially when like killing a demon physically affects him, so it's kind of it is directly related.
Yeah, well, if anything, for him to like survive and live a good life, he needs to finish this.
And
then he'll have the life he deserves.
And then we go back to the modern day, where they realize that he's got his sense of pain, or presumably just sense of touch entirely, because he puts his foot over, which is why he was screaming in the end of the last episode, and he puts his foot over the fire, and he can feel the heat, and then he sticks his foot in the fire, because...
Yeah, this is a new sensation.
He can feel pain again, it's amazing.
But he can't express the pain, because he hasn't got his voice back yet.
Yeah.
His face can kind of contort.
Yes, but
it's a very like a point. This really hurts. I'm finding it very stimulating. I'm very confused by this, which was impressive enough in itself.
Yes, it was. It was quite well conveyed how they did it. And yeah, he's got the other two to look out for him. Because that's the fascinating thing. Is like how do you address him dealing with particularly the senses coming back? More than anything else.
Oh man, when his sense of style comes back, he's gonna look great.
Good episode. This show, I mean, I liked the first episode, but it's growing on me more and more. It's a classy production.
From what little I've heard a bit about the final episode, it seems to be stray a little bit from the original kind of story, which I think is fine, because I think this is like a good premise for a story in of itself. I kind of see what it's going to do itself. I feel like it's going to be a little bit more ambitious in its themes here down the line. So I won't be too reverent of the original manga if it's going to like restrain those impulses.
Well, like you said, it's already it's already doing it differently in that it's not giving his voice back straight away, which I think is a more interesting way to take it, because it's not so much a sense that is an input, it's a sense that's an output. So we don't have his voice. We have to infer what he's thinking and feeling the whole time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think actually like silence works better in film and television and animation than it probably does on the page.
Oh I totally understand why you'd want, because you need to have that monologue to express a lot of things that you can't.
I think you've got a silent comic, there are good silent comics, but I think it's There's a
it's not the easiest thing.
A pacing issue, whereas with film, it's a fixed pace. It's however many frames per second you've got and what your running time is.
The thing I've seen with the comics is if there's a panel without any dialogue in it, people will tend to glance at it and then move on to the next panel without like staying on it as long as you would
unless,
as a panel that you should read.
Unless you're a really good cartoonist who can drive your eye.
You can convey that this is something you need to watch, that kind of thing. It's much more difficult.
With the action within the panels drives your eye around the page following the panels. Mm-hmm. That's...
Yeah. The great example that I can think of this to illustrate would be from, did you ever read Darwin Cook's, Parker the Hunter?
Oh, those ones are fucking great, man.
Yeah. just the first bit of that where you're just like following Parker who's fucking down on his luck. He's, got no money. He's got no fucking clean clothes, but how he sort of climbs back that and puts on this facade of having money and congratulating to getting things. It goes on for page to page, fucking really no dialogue at all until you like face him like the dingy bathroom mirror of a diner and you see the absolute state that he's in. And it's like, oh man, that's great.
But
the way he kind of like, conveyed all that and just kind of like, follow that all the up to that point and then it hits you all with it all at once was really good.
Mm.
Hey, what I was thinking of was the first volume of Cyborg 009. But, again, partly because of this being Tezuka and Cyborg 009 being a thing which broke Tezuka's brain in terms of realizing, oh shit, I can't do action like this. Or at least according to that recent, Ishinomori, biography drama they did in Japan. And who am I to disagree with that?
No.
Next up, Mob Psycho 102. Episode 4 is the next episode. One danger after another, degeneration. With some tildes either side of the degeneration. So this is more of the stuff coming out from the Urban Legends episode. The one thing we've got to mention is that Regan started a website last
week. No, we did mention
that. Oh yes, an amazing website.
No, I thought we said it was like, it looked like a MySpace looking fucking thing or something, didn't we?
I don't know, I couldn't remember. After the episode I thought, oh, we forgot to mention it. But maybe we did, I just forgot.
Unless we talked about it like after the episode. Like, maybe. That's the only thing I'm thinking, yeah.
God, it's fucking Final Fantasy VII early fan site.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's like the stereotypical Japanese site which still looks like GeoCities.
Yeah.
For a good example, I think Nabashin's website still looks like that, if I remember correctly.
Jeez, man.
Why would we need to update it? What was fine?
I remember, I don't know if it's still fucking up now, but maybe it was in Internet Archive or something like that, but the Space Jam website was still up.
Yeah.
And it was a view into the fucking past, man. It was amazing.
I think we did a podcast about Space Coast, Coast to Coast. I think we tracked down one of the sites for that, and it was still... I was either set up or was preserved somewhere.
some of those old fan sites, man. Yeah, amazing shit. I think my favorite part was like the shitty, like little fucking picture, like cause you know, low fucking compression and shit, of Regan that was like, you could have taken a second picture that would have been slightly better, but all of it's pretty great. Like,
it's doing a great job cause he gets three jobs this episode.
In one day. Holy shit.
Yeah. The first one is a guy who wants Regan to write a curse for him.
I don't do that kind of thing.
We don't do curses, and for legal reasons we can't do curses. It's like, come on, man, you said you're psychic.
You can remove them, so you can probably know how to put one on. Well, yeah, but I'm more about trying to solve problems rather than causing somebody else. But it's just be fucking solving a problem for me. So you don't know this guy. He's a fucking dick. Just give me a curse.
Regan, like, I love the fact that he has to not like knock out a fake curse, but also say to Mob, I give him a fake curse. But not to, like, throw Mob off the scent that is like, I'm not actually not psychic and everything I do is fake. it's a weird line he has to tread. Yeah.
A placebo curse.
Yeah, he wrote a curse in a piece of paper and said, here you go. Put that in your pocket. Don't tell anyone about it. I'm doing this pro bono because I don't want to get in trouble legally.
then they have a woman who's being, an apparition keeps on appearing outside her window. She feels like she's being watched. And that turns out to be the Esper who's living next door to her.
He's just a super creep.
Using astral projection to fucking
creep on her. Yeah, yeah. Because it starts off, obviously, he's outside the window, but they're on the fifth floor and there's no balcony, so that can't be it. And then, like, she senses him, or does Mob see him, like, through the wall, like kind of like the dude looking through a peephole kind of fucking thing. Super grody. And she goes from, like, terrified at the psychic powers to when it realizes it's some weird, creepy guy. It's like, ugh, fuck that guy. Turns to revulsion very quickly. Yeah. And Mob's kind of confused by this, obviously.
Yeah, because the crux of the episode is Mob questioning whether humans are as bad as spirits, if not all else.
I liked how that was framed, that it literally put him in the middle where Regan's realizing, oh, like spirits, spirit psychic things and humans are basically at the same level to Mob. Yeah. I mean, like basically all like a million miles below him in terms of power level, but yeah. He doesn't really understand the difference.
Yeah, it's more like he's immersed in the sort of weird stuff, like,
in both,
all the time.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, he sees both sides fairly equally or the same. So
I love how it shows how immersed he is and how many friends he has by showing him walking home from school and getting bullied.
That's after the third people.
But that's after, they come back. You're right.
They're in the middle of the college kids who want to, before they graduate, they want to go to a haunted house.
Straight away, I was thinking, fuck those guys.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh my god, no, just don't do this job. I don't like these guys.
And Regan doesn't want to do it, and they manage to convince him, and they drive him out, and they don't get to find any ghosts, so they don't pay him, and they don't drive him back. And like the line just before the break of, we'll get a taxi, and then the brake card is Regan. Thumbing down a truck with Mob hiding behind a bush.
but the driver lets him, like, both sit in the front of the truck.
Yeah, he lets him sit in the front cabin.
All the
sound out. It all worked out pretty good, but it was just, yeah, the Regan being cheap and everything. But those fucking guys were like, okay, there's like a ghost. You gotta do like your exorcism shit. And he's like, yeah, sure. And he's like, come on, take the picture first. And he's like, yeah, I'll take the picture. And he's like, we didn't even get haunted by a ghost, man. We're not paying. That kind of, I was just like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Bunch of bricks.
Regan has been quite patient the whole thing. I'm clearly annoyed, but
customers. They're paying customers until they're not paying customers.
Well, I guess when I eat out tonight, lads, let's go home. And Mob is like, those guys are fucking awful. What the fuck?
Yeah.
And then after the break, we get him being bullied by, I presume, high school kids. They seem to be like,
from another school. Yeah.
They seem to have the older, another school uniform and like the older school uniform, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think it's just weird that some of the kids at this middle school are giants.
they show up for comparison.
Well, when you improve your body, you naturally get taller.
I mean, there's one guy in the body besides Mob who's quite short, but he's still ripped, so yeah.
So first of all, Dimple tries to protect him by possessing the guy and taking all his clothes off.
And trying to make him jump in the river, I think.
Yeah.
So Mob is like, hey, come on, Dimple, fucking don't do that to him. You'll do some damage. Yeah.
Then Ritsu starts throttling him with telekinesis, wrapping it up.
I love the fact your man puts his pants back on and is like, alright, let's fucking try this shit again. Something went terribly wrong there, I don't understand. But then he starts getting choked by his own fucking tie. And Mob insists, like, don't do it, bro, it's alright, this guy's not worth it.
Yeah, then the Body Improvement Club show up, and they don't beat him up, they just stand around him.
They compress him menacingly, you know?
Okay, boys, use your muscles to bind him. It's like, no, what? No, what are you guys doing? Sorry, our policy is non-violent resistance.
It's fucking beautiful. Yeah, it totally fits within the club rules. It's amazing.
You're supposed to use these hot muscles for crime, for evil intentions.
Yeah, but they're not going to use. They're going to let a member of their club get bullied either. So you know, they surround him in a wall of muscle from which he can't breathe.
But then they all tell him that he's got to stick up, use his shadow powers.
Yeah, your man shows up, who was just like waiting in the sidelines for your man to try again. It's like, yeah, use your shadow fucking puppet fucking shit. You know, go for it. And I'm wondering how many more of Mob's allies were in the sidelines just waiting to fucking help him out.
All those, like, gangs of delinquents who revere him, you know, probably waiting around the corner for the pipes and chains.
Well, yeah, I believe a lot of those other allies are having their, keeping their powder dry for later on in the series.
Sure, sure. We can't use them all in this one scene.
It'd be a bit overkill for bullies. I think there's more pressing things they need to be dealing with.
Sure. What's more to reinforce the mob on? Like, not a lot of people are fucking great, but not a lot of people are bad because I've got some friends as well. So I guess there are shades of gray on both the living and spiritual worlds. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Which would be reinforced when they get called back at the end of that, rural third job because they saw something in the photo.
Yeah. It's like the whole photo's haunted and Regan's got his finger over Photoshop. He's like, I can fix that for you. It's like, no. I forgot that was his solution. I fucking love that.
It's his highest level ability, right?
Oh, dear. They want a full exorcism. They'll take the highest package, so he can't really fucking deny that. I assume he's going to back charge them for the last job as well. I hope.
But, yeah, mobs. He tries to get Mob to do it, but the spirits are just a perfectly benign family of ghosts.
It's a dad and a mom and a kid, and they apparently died in something horrible because their house is fucked. And they just want to... They didn't get to live very long together, so they just want to live as much afterlife as they can until they pass on. And that's all they want, and that's not good enough for the fucking shitty college kids. Ah, hate those guys.
No, they want it out, and... Rick is trying to push him, but I'm saying, no, it's fucking the hardest for the job, Mob. We gotta do it. Customer's always right, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, he's not too gone and fucking going to it. He's just being professional, I think, is his problem.
And so Dimple tries to convince the dad of the family to become an evil spirit.
Like, if you just kill them, then they won't want to have you exercise, so problem fucking solved. And he nearly gets there, but the dad's like, no, I can't fucking do that.
Take me, but no, leave my...
Leave my wife and child. Yeah.
Dimple's like, yeah, well, no, not evil bone in his body. Or spirit. Or whatever.
Yeah. Like, I tried to push him into being evil, but he actually fucking resisted.
Ectoplasm.
Yeah.
And admittedly, that is at some point also during this, is it the end or is it somewhere in the middle that, Regan has Dimple eat the curse, which.
That's right at the end.
Oh, that's right at the end.
Right at the end. Okay, I couldn't remember where it was. Because I was like, yeah, Dimple, it seems to be, it feels like creepy, it's like, oh, Dimple, you fucker. And then you're like, oh, no, it's not so bad, yeah, he's not gonna push him any further than what he was doing. But you're like, oh no, because you wanted him to turn evil, because you like eating evil spirits.
Yeah, no, it was to benefit Dimple as well. Yes. When he was doing the exorcism of the creepy stalker guy, they get Dimple to go around. He's like, Dimple, you can eat anything evil you find, and then he closes the window after.
Oh, yeah.
And Dimple's really insulted. That's fucking amazing.
Like, it's like, you know, just kind of like slime through it. I'm not
it's
kind of
the principle of the matter. it's a fairly benign family of ghosts, and Regan's kind of like sees that Mob isn't too into doing it. He's like, well, I'll leave it up to you, man. I mean, like, you know best this thing.
This. And this is like a lot more emotion and assertiveness than Mob has shown by previously in Regan's experience. He's like, well, what's it? It's obviously this is something that's affecting him very deeply, and he's having some very serious concerns about this that he's grappling with.
Yeah, it's him like kind of shaking because he has to make the morally right choice here, which is right. Should I go by what the shitty humans want, or should I exercise the spirit, or should I go by the spirits who seem fucking nowhere, no problem? And he's literally caught in the middle of these two worlds, yeah.
And, and so basically Regan goes, oh, I'll do the exorcism, just throw some salt on the test and then we got exorcism done.
Oh, that was beautiful.
but in, like, in such a way that he's not going to take any more questions from them.
yeah.
This exorcism is over. Camera's off. Get him out of here.
Yeah. It's a good way to end it suddenly. Because you can see that it's just Mob's stressing over having to make the moral decision. Or it's more than a moral decision. It's like choose which world you're in. That kind of thing.
Yeah, it's this, like, mob's whole thing is that, like, oh, he's this sort of, like, featureless guy who blends into the crowd, doesn't stand out,
yeah,
except his amazing powers. But that doesn't necessarily extend to his personality and his morals. No, he isn't just this, like, fucking very middle-of-the-road guy. No, he's fucking... He has... his own fucking feelings here. He isn't a fucking robot. Even if he is very socially awkward, but it doesn't mean that he isn't think about these things and they don't affect him.
Well, I find that as fascinating as well, like the scene earlier with the bullies and all the people coming to his aid. It basically kind of shows that a lot of people care about him because of who he is, or, I mean, like, all of them perceive him very, very differently, but it shows that he's a good kid and he has potential to be good, but he doesn't have that assertiveness in himself to notice that other people are kind of flocking around him because of that.
Yeah, and then he tries to think about it at the end, but it's too much, so he falls asleep. Possibly due to exhaustion, according to the director.
I think his percentage goes up a little as well.
It does, yes.
Mm.
67% at the end of this episode.
Mm. Some existential stuff going to raise that up a little. And yeah, Regan has to get Dimple to suck the curse out of his back, because, like, I guess that was a guy who could do a real curse, who just wanted to test you. And I can't get Mob to get rid of it, because that will cause questions. Come on, Dimple, yeah. I know you like this shit.
Just gnawing it off his back. it's like one of those fish you get to clean your feet.
I suppose so. I guess that's another service Regan could provide.
Next week, they go to the house of a rich man. Lots of Akio Atsuka, because he was Dr. Juki as well.
He was, yeah.
Dimple. We're keeping him busy. Next up is Rinchi Akodashan, episode 3. This one doesn't have a title, but they're all animals. I can't remember exactly what it was. It had more characters in it, and there was just a load of gags again. And they were animals this time.
Bushy running on thing, where Akodashan is this... constantly being bugged or running into this, like, this couple, and the girl's acting so super cute. She loves animals and keeps trying to test her, like, you know, for and saying, you always put that fucking act on. I'll show you now. I'm gonna like buy a dog carrier and just wait in this park bench. And they're gonna come by and gonna be fucking, saying, oh, what cute. What's in there? Could it be a cat or a dog? Oh, I don't know. And she'd be like, you stupid fucker. I was keeping my person there. You're going to look like a real fool. You're looking and then walk up and say, oh, there's the cutest person there. Oh my gosh. She's like, motherfucker. What is this girl? Oh, she's so upbeat and happy all the time.
Yeah. I did like the commentary on the end with the actress. Cause she was saying, it's like, I think what was the term they use? Like someone who's playing cutesy, someone who's playing kind of...
Bird of Prey, is that what they call them?
Yeah, yes. I think Bird of Prey was a thing, but I forget what the English equivalent is, but someone who's pretending to be kind of like dopey, kind of cute, that kind of thing. And it's more so that's not what this girl is. I think that might be just her, the character's perception of what this girl is doing.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's kind of one repeated joke.
Also, she's been shoving food into her sister while she's asleep.
Take that, now you're going to be fat.
Put like a whole, like, a whole block of butter down her mouth, I think.
Weirdly, despite everyone being animals, this was the one which resembled the live action, at least what I've seen of the live action, in her just getting mad at other women. Being a recurring beat, at least in the episode I saw on YouTube.
Okay.
There's there's an animal who doesn't know, is trying to get into, S&M. Tie herself up, so she was boiling some rope.
Oh god, yeah.
And her dad found it.
And he thought it was noodles initially, and then it's like, now it's just weird and creepy. But what was her problem at the end?
I'm not sure which bit of that you want me to comment on.
Yeah, that was it. That was it. Fucking beautiful.
Where do we start with this?
That's quite the story. Yes, indeed. Okay.
Her rules for doodling: ketchup on omelets, hands in condensation, and faces on knees.
And then it's like when you just kind of sit down on the ground and you put on each of them, it's like, hi, knees, good to see you. It's been a while. Oh, and just because we're watching 20 Rock, it seems like such a Liz Lemon thing to do to relieve yes. your loneliness.
It's reminding me, there's a fucking, it's a meme going around of people like drawing on their backs and they kind of shove their shoulders down by their knees and still dress like a weird sort of pseudo human creature. It reminded me of that. And I was like, yeah, yeah, one of those kind of things you do for fun, I guess.
Yeah, so this episode was directed by Shigino Akira and who was the voice? I'll wait for it to scrook. And it's Tatsumi Yuiko as the voice actress. Again, I look at them and then I look at their, at least the, all the directors so far, you look at them, then you look at their Anime News Network encyclopedia page and you got that photo needs updating.
Maybe that's their official one, like if you went to their company, like they have the young, handsome picture as their standard.
Oh God, yes.
Employee geez. One. Yeah.
You know, what's going on with you?
I assume he's not wearing the old paddy cap like he is in the interview then.
My favorite bit in the interview is him explaining why they're animals.
That's a good fucking excuse. I'll give him that. Yeah.
Because he didn't want to censor the nudity, but he was like, oh, cartoon animals are nude all the time in cartoons.
Everybody's nude this episode. Yeah, works.
Yeah.
But then they couldn't decide if her boyfriend was like a dog or a horse. Like, I thought he was a horse. It's like, really? I said he should be a dog.
That was some kind of weird weasel thing.
Exactly. It's just like, it's what animal you want it to be.
Principal from My Hero Academia. What is he? We don't know, but it's cute.
It's a little sad where it's like, why did he take the off chance to direct it? It's basically, well, I don't get a chance to direct things much nowadays.
Ouch. Like, you got to take what work you're giving, man. Oh, dear.
Oh, he does some Shinja movies. Oh, yeah, he's only doing storyboards for Shinja movies these days, looks like. So.
Well, yeah, he's in his mid-60s, so.
Yes.
And I think she wants to, there's some of the comments the actress makes about how, I think, even though she's like 7 years older than Coda-chan, somehow Coda-chan seems older than she is in some ways.
Like, I feel like in some of the prior episodes, her cynicism is definitely makes her very, very old. But in this episode, there's a lot of petty childish things she does.
Mm-hmm.
Petty and childish things she does, like drawing on her knees, that kind of thing.
The director's professor basically just said, I just picked out the strips I found the funniest and ones which got lots of the characters into it.
Yeah, he did complain there was one that he really liked that someone else was adapting. He's like, oh, I wanted that one. That's a good way to pick it. Like, I like this one and this one and this one, so I'm going to do those ones. Yeah.
Mm. I wonder if that had a similar thing for Pop Team Epic, or it's like, okay, we want to get so much to go around. So you can't all have the chicken or beef sketch. Damn it!
Everyone does their own version of that. Yeah, that would have been mad.
Unless Akaboo, I mean, they did some of the same sketches that other people did. Do you see the new music video?
I didn't see all of us because my
DJ Powder.
I didn't see all of it because my connection ran out when I was watching it on the train. But
I forgot I followed their YouTube channel. They now have two videos up. That's the second one on the YouTube channel.
All right. Slow and steady wins the race.
I mean, they've got other videos on their website. The only other one on their YouTube channel is the previous time or one of the previous times they'd done one of the flipboard animation stories. So it's like the proto Hellshake Yano. shame the producer didn't know them.
Oops.
Oh fuck, they would have done a great episode, yeah.
They would.
I mean, like with the flipboard, obviously.
I feel like it's a case of this series is looking to exist. It feels like from the comments from the first episode about how long ago we asked Akitaro Daiichi to work on it.
right.
It's relied on him, yeah, getting favors from people he already knew.
This is a real fucking passion project, then, trying to get all these guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's done a lot of animation stuff before, but what he mainly does now, I believe, is theater, particularly theater based on anime. I think he's, okay. I think he's one of the main guys behind how popular that guy in the 2000s. But you look at his Twitter channel, it's all, it was all people rehearsing a Christmas carol that he was putting on. Yeah, anyway, that was the Cody Chan for this week. There's another episode next week.
Great.
And probably, and yeah, and for the following weeks until there's 12 of them done.
I was going to say, did we not get a preview? But they did the preview, but they covered over the faces, yeah, and they didn't say who's doing it. I was just like, oh yeah, yeah, they don't, it's not really a preview then, is it?
No. next up is Karakuri Circus, which did not air this week. And so I'm always disappointed though, they didn't give us on Amazon Prime what they got in Japan, which was, get this, a episode summarizing the previous 14 episodes.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, God.
I kind of want to watch that. That sounds like a fucking headache.
90-minute special.
God.
When you think about how much they cut out to get all that information into 14 episodes, how much would they cut out for half an hour of it?
Like, is it going to be one of the things where they just have, like, the images, you know, going, flashing, probably at fast forward in the fucking background, while some guy very quickly spends, and then he went there, but that guy died, so don't worry about this, you know, just someone over...
I'm just hoping it was Bacabon's Papa doing a PowerPoint presentation.
Okay, yeah, sure.
They just did a fucking... A mad video of the Bacano opening, but with Karakushika's characters. There, his other guys. And other names, you can remember them before they get killed in the scene that they appear in.
Yeah, maybe someone with a whiteboard just crossing them out. dear.
Anyway, back next week. I was really annoyed because I was looking forward to seeing the next episode. Weirdly,
that would have been
somehow
amazing.
Karakuri Circus is the thing I look forward most to each week.
You like suffering, Brian.
It's no, just fascination.
It's
really
fascination. Like... You're right now. That is what it is. It's what can they possibly do next that is so...
How wrong? Are they going to fuck this up? Yeah.
This happened with you before, like, with Last Village, which you would think would not be your kind of thing, but just because of the strange directions it took, you just came back and get in again for it.
Yeah.
And to be fair, that was directed by... Well, let's say this is directed and written by the Yoshio and Toro guys, so...
Yeah.
Don't know what happened. Happening? Don't know what happened.
Maybe Yoshio Toro would look the same if you went back to the manga and... But I suppose it did make sense with itself. This problem is, even if you're not looking at the manga, it doesn't make sense within itself quite often.
Yeah.
He's just going to very carefully braid these two story threads, and then somewhere along the line it just got into a big knotted knotty ball. And now even he can't untangle it.
I think the Shirigani dog is the mascot for the confusion of this adaptation.
Well, that thing disappeared again in the last episode. We haven't seen it like in at least an episode, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I believe it shows up again.
Okay.
Anyway, Boogie Pop and Others. Something which does something similar, but does it right.
Yeah, confusion going off on what seemed like a tangent from the last episode. But...
No, I think the case is that the first episode was a tangent and we're now in the main story.
Like, that guy was an incidental character to this story.
Yes.
We'll get involving story the girl eventually. He saved or helped save.
So this is where the Prince references come in. So we switch focus from, is it Jin Asuka? Asuka? Asukai? Anyway, the teacher.
Yeah.
He's just calling himself Imaginator, isn't he?
No, but he's not when he goes to school. He doesn't show...
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sorry.
For Mr. Imaginator.
And the substitute teacher.
That's
Mr.
what he's calling Chad his Sexington superpower Imaginator. Persona. That's what I mean, goddammit.
So it switches focus to the boy and the girl that he saved from the bullies.
And, like, it recontextualized that twice in the same fucking episode, which is great.
It is, yes. Because it doesn't focus... Again, it's a bit like the first arc where the first episode was all focused on one person's point of view, and then this one we get a few people's point of views.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't learn until later in the episode that this boy is the stepbrother of
Kiriminagi.
Yeah. And he's just returned from overseas. His parents have sent him back to get some school.
Where is he? He was in Phnom Penh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his grades are good enough, but it's just he has to do, like, this year of high school just so he can graduate high school.
Yeah. And the other kids resent him.
Because, like, it's not that, like, I guess he's vaguely handsome and smart, so he can help out the girls, and it's like, how dare he talk to the girls? It's like, you fucking talk to them.
Getting
idiot.
Good grades. This is like an old, this, like, being a swat.
Like, it's basically like, as your one, like, straight up fucking calls him out, and it's like, oh, it's your own internal pent up sexual frustration that you're putting out on as his fault.
Yeah. Yes. And then she weirdly then offers her body to protect him.
Yeah. Like, I guess that was her way of, like, protecting, yeah, like you say, protecting him. Because initially, from what we've seen in the scene, it looks like he was stepping in the way to stop them at her. But she was actually stepping in to save him. And then he stepped, no, I'll step in front of you. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Jin shows up and goes, no, I'll steal you this, you two run away.
Yeah, so he's kind of like trying to comfort her because he assumes that she has some trauma or something like that. He's like, I better go back, check on that guy in the alley, see if he's got his ass handed to him. Just wait here. He goes to check and your man walks out of the alley. He's like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't go in there. Don't go down that alley.
And before with this, we'd see them a little bit in the future where they're on a date and he's like explaining to the viewer that...
I guess we're dating?
I guess we're dating, yes.
Or sort of, which she's not exactly your... average kind of girl.
She doesn't seem into it. She's kind of taken aback. It's like, yeah, but dude, you want to fuck me, right? And he's like, what? You know, it's like, that's not appropriate first date talk.
She's not one for small talk.
No.
She's trying to add a little cute, like, back and forth text things. And it's just like, she just went in, just answered the questions very matter of factly. Okay. How was your day? Fine. Like, not in a mean way, just the way that she is, just answering very, very bluntly and to the point.
Like, are you free Saturday? Yes. What time?
Yeah.
It's just like, and of course, there's no emotion there.
And of course, you wonder then, based off of the nature of this program, is she an alien? Is she some kind of being made out of pure information? What's going on with her?
Yeah, and that's semi-confirmed by the end of the episode.
It's definitely similar to another character whose point of view on all the other events that we just saw we're going to see.
So we see one of the fellas who was with the gang of bullies now, and he's
he notably wasn't with the gang who was beating him up.
He was in prior scenes where they were on the date and he was going to get a hot dog and a burger.
Yes.
And he was kind of like, oh, it's you, the big guy, but you're going out with the girls. He's been in scenes, but he's been conspicuously absent from the attack that we've seen.
We still been holding a guard, go to clearing lots of classroom, and assuming he's one of those kind of bullies, but saying that fucking stealing my man. No,
initially I thought he was one of the three bullies because I was like, okay, I recognize that character, so he must have been one of the bullies. But yeah, as it kind of went on, I was like, oh, he actually wasn't there. He was off to the side of that scene, literally.
Because it turns out that he's fallen in love with him at first sight.
He's not acting out of jealousy that the attention that he gets from girls. He's jealous that someone else has his attention.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, but the other idiot bullies are like, oh, you hate him. You're always glaring at him.
They also love him.
Yeah. It doesn't out and out say that, does it? At any stage?
No, he says love at first sight.
He says I love him.
Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering, did it just imply it? I wasn't sure.
Yeah. Hmm. He's basically stalking him after that point.
Yes. Pretending to chance meet him at McDonald's when he's stalking him on the date and then running to McDonald's after him kind of thing.
When they're on the date and she licks the ketchup off his lips, that's when he gets the text from his mate saying, oh no, she'll have sex with anybody who asks. And then while he's been stalking Spooky E shows up thinking that this kid's been stalking Aya.
Yeah, because he's basically like, I better stalk her for a bit and see what kind of bad news she is for that guy who I can't get out of my head.
Yes. Well, he's going to remove all thought, a whole load of thoughts from your head and turn you into a terminal for the Toa organization.
Yeah. And your only directive now is to get good grades and get into the school.
Yes. Because you could be, you'll be our sleeper agent in that school, so await their further instructions. So he becomes a model student.
Yes.
And everything. Studies and, really hard, gets his grades up. Yeah.
And because that's the same school that Aya, the girl's planning on getting into.
Hmm.
Then he gets a love letter, which causes him to start crying. And so
I think he starts crying in the teacher's office when the teacher's like, "Yeah, you've really fucking pulled yourself together. With these grades, you'll absolutely get any school you want, dude." And he's just openly weeping, and he's like, "Oh, that's weird. I don't understand why that is." So he has to ring up his new boss to say, "Hey, I got a love letter. What do? That's not part of the program."
Yes, delete your memories.
But it's handy that you can do all the business over the phone these days, isn't it?
Yes. But then Asghar Jinn shows up after he's been looking at the painting that Asghar Jinn stuck on the wall called Snow in April. And then I'm going like, oh, Snow Falling April. It's like, had he already painted that, or has he painted that since getting into league with Imaginator?
Was that, like, yeah, was he inspired and that became the title?
Yeah, or had he already painted that, and that's how Imaginator's luring him in, because it was
She pulled that out of him, that kind of thing. Mm, mm.
And he basically says he can't be saved, but he does remove the programming that Spooky E's done to him.
Yeah, yeah. I was kind of confused at that, as to why, like, but you just appeared to save him. What are you saying?
Well, yeah, then he explains cryptically what he's planning, and it doesn't sound much better than what Spooky and the Toa Corporation have got planned for him.
Yeah, yeah. he's got his own evil plan, I guess.
I imagine it's a plan that he thinks is a good plan.
Well, he's gonna fight evil is his plan.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And then he finds the love letter again.
In his bag.
Yes.
Yeah.
He goes to meet
the girl at the park or a plaza or something like that. Was it?
Yeah. It's like in a building somewhere, because the girl. Yeah.
It's like got a fountain or a statue or something there. Yeah.
She leaps into the rafters because it's actually Boogie Pop.
That was a fake letter, as we later learned.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
But now Boogie Pop's confused as to why they found it in the bag and not in the locker. But hey, Spooky is here. That's what the plan was in the first place.
Gonna fuck him up.
Yep.
Some wires.
What Boogie Pop says is like, well, I wasn't gonna come after you, but, you know, fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Then they're going to meet in the park again, but then this is Aya and the boy whose name I've forgotten throughout this entire recap.
Hot bod.
But before he gets there, Spooky E is here and asks what Aya's doing there and calls her Camille. So Spooky E is short for Spooky Electric and Camille is Camille, which are both alter egos of Prince, or that he claimed he had.
I guess like alter egos kind of fit this theme as well, yeah.
Camille being his good female alter ego and Spooky Electric being his evil demonic alter ego.
That fits.
Yep.
Yeah, I love this show. It's cracking. Absolute cracking.
I'm fascinated as to what the next episode is going to be and how it's going to change the context of everything I've just watched again.
Yeah.
Well, from this person's point of view, oh, fuck, okay, that's what was happening.
I guess there'll be a degree of wrap-up, because I believe this will be, the next one will be the wrap-up of the first volume of Versus Imaginator.
Right.
Because it definitely looks like they're doing generally three, unless they're going to mix it up a bit more and like spread all the material of the two volumes across six episodes, because we know now that the next starts on that 10th episode when they're going to show all four parts at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the origin of Boogie Pop.
Oh,
which will change the context of all the other things we've watched.
Everything we've ever seen.
Why can't they just be at the start of the story, in the middle of the story, and the end of the story? No.
To give you
how about the same story over and over again from different people's points of view?
Yeah, I tried that and no one liked it.
Yes. And I guess it's going to be that slightly earlier than where it came in the novelization, because then I think the next one will be when you get to like a lot more details of the Toa Corporation will probably be the final arc.
Okay.
Probably to end things on an exciting note rather than go back to the start and explain everything which just happened.
Yeah. Well, sure. The opening promises us the building blowing up, so I presume it's their building.
Yes. One would assume so.
But what kind of corporation they are as well? Like, what's their deal? Is it? I have a feeling like that's because of Spooky's whole thing was using electrical powers to sort of numb that guy since other fucking sensations and feelings and thoughts just to focus on this one thing. But he still comes out even though he's shown like a moving letter and he bursts into tears. Which just doesn't fucking react to it emotionally. That's something to do with like electroshock therapy, which does do that to your brain.
Yeah,
it's probably both that and like obviously he's rewiring his brain by fiddling with the electricity that's moving around in it, the synapses and everything. Yeah,
it's just with that as well. But like Kira Minanagi, you know, she is not what one would call a kind of traditional kind of girl of her age, who kind of just blends in and keeps her head down and doesn't go to school. You know, she's got to go out and fight weird urban legend things on the streets at night. She's not quite normal. She doesn't quite conform to her own values. I wanted to try and say something about that for like people who like that. People like some just don't kind of think something mentally wrong with them, and the only thing to do was just like fucking use fucking therapy or otherwise to try and hammer all those little impulses out of them.
That's certainly a thing people, some people think with people who kind of exist not outside of, but oddly in society. They don't fit the normal roles, that kind of thing. Yeah.
So I would not be surprised if the corporation, that if their front business at least isn't something to do with like psychiatrics or mental health or something like that.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, so far it seems mainly to be cloning, because...
Well, I mean, like that could be something medical, like, you know, replacement organs, that kind of thing.
Well, because Boogie Pop calls Spooky Mr. Synthetic Human from the Toa organization.
I'm not going to grace him with his name.
And also insults him that he's not as powerful as Manticore was.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's kind of insulted, saying, I'm going to kill you, I can just chop you up and shit. It's bullshit.
I mean, Boogie Pop seems ever more sarcastic each time they appear.
Yeah.
Almost so smug.
Yes.
But I like it though.
Almost so smug and generally like, well, I wasn't even going to fight you, but you know, fuck it, I'm here now. So, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Like, and not the plot sort of resolving outside of their control.
Just like her fucking cadence when she's just mouthing off at somebody. It sounds a lot like, this keeps reminding me in my head of, and Kenji Rosuda, who plays, he played like Ogata and Golden Kamuy and much other things. He has a child like kind of really sort of long drawl of an accent. And it kind of is similar to how she's talking. And it reinforces how much of a fucking smug little piece of shit she's being.
Yeah, it's like snarky talking down to, but like really like emotionless drawn out. And that somehow makes it more emphasized.
More threatening, certainly.
Yeah.
But yeah, the more I see of it, the more I can see the influence of this on Do Ra Ra Ra, to a degree. They're both in the storytelling and some of the themes. And it's definitely better made than some of the later series of that show. But I'm not sure whether that is the show's problem or the novels it's adapting's problem.
Yeah, you don't know if it's been lost in translation or is that a correct version? Yeah.
I just think, there's in that anime's case, I think there's probably just some weaker storylines than stronger storylines.
Okay.
And, because sometimes you like get into a groove of it and you're like, oh yeah, I really like these new characters they've introduced. And
then they'll introduce some more new characters, and you're like, not so keen on that, but I've not really had that problem so far with this. Partly because I think with this, it's not relying quite so much on you getting to know the characters, and that is the criticism that people who read the novels have got against the anime. I feel like this is more in love with the structure of the story, in terms of the telling of the story.
I think that's fair.
This, particularly with the second half, with the kid who falls in love at first sight, and
I don't think getting on of that would be a help. Most of those complaints stemmed from in the last arc that classmate who met up with Echoes, and then she explained the whole spiel about how he operates, and then Oyo received Masaru, and then was her getting eaten by Manticore. And apparently in the books there's a lot more elaboration and a lot more kind of detail about her as a character and stuff before that. So
I think part of what they were trying to do in the show was to show that basically our story begins when she's already fucking gone, and and definitely like some of the characters like what's his name feel that that loss. But obviously, if you're going to miss out on that characterization from the books, then you're not going to feel the loss as the viewer. You're watching the characters feel that loss.
Anyway, talking of feeling losses, we've got a double bill of depressing cartoons now.
Oh God!
The first one is Bono Bono, episode 43, Raccoon Chan, Bono Chan, a show that hides its. It's really light and funny until the very last sentences of the episode, and then fucking hell.
I feel like they really want to play that as like, ho-ho, yes, child beating.
It's awful. It's just fucking really buries that lead, because you got, it's another cute baby episode. It's going to be cute. Yeah. The fucking heads are too big. They're going to fall over. It's going to be adorable. But focusing this distance on Raccoon and his dad when Raccoon was a baby, and how as we know, Raccoon's dad was always an asshole. Does not know how to care for a child properly.
He literally states the line, "The only thing I hate more than my kid is other people's kids." Like, fucking hell, dude.
But it's just illustrating when, like, he's walking in the woods and he's fucking...
He does everything that's necessary of him.
Yes, and Raccoon is having a good time. That's the key.
Because he doesn't know better yet, the poor bastard.
Yeah.
When you hear his voice over at the end, it's like, he fucking knows now.
Well, yeah.
He remembers.
No, but I think the point is that he doesn't remember all these things which happened in this episode. Because all he remembers is the first time his dad hit him, and not the good times he was having with Bono and Boss Bear by the river.
Yeah. Even Boss Bear back then was a lot more chilled out. Yeah.
It's good to see a more chilled out Boss Bear, a Boss Bear that is pre having kids himself, but he actually he likes kids. It's just he's fucking terrifying.
Yes.
Is his problem. Yeah.
So I think I don't think it's damning up to it's one of these kids programs where it's supposed to be parents programs as well. It's basically you for all the good times you have with your kids when they're young, they might not remember that. Just the one time you punch them or hit them. That more than the good times. So don't do that. Just do the good times.
That's the thing with people. From being online or whatever. If you get a million fucking good comments and you get one shitty person, that's the one you remember. It's
each
a survival.
All day.
Yeah, it's a survival instinct that your brain holds onto negative memories and emotions better than positive ones. And that's, when you're growing up, that's an awful thing. That's what leads to fucking childhood trauma and shit. It's why Raccoon's kind of a jerk to this day.
Yes. The best joke is when Bono's dad's giving Bono to Raccoon's dad, and they're saying goodbye, and Raccoon is then walking off with Bono's dad.
Save him, please. I was just leading up to that when Bono's dad carrying a baby in the proper way, and then just fucking just Raccoon's just carrying his son like a bag of cans. This is and hanging by his side. What's that?
It's pretty great. Raccoon's Dad trying to, like, how do I get him in so he's held safely and, you know, just being the caring parent that he is. But half that's what I love about these Bono-Chan episodes, where it's obviously the cutesy things and their big heads and them falling over and being cute babies. But a lot of it's like the parents having to deal with their cute shenanigans.
And having worries about it.
Bono's
dead. He's a bit of a spacey character. But he's almost like a fucking single father who doesn't know how to raise a child. So he's tending to kind of learn and do his best along the way. He doesn't always get it right, but guy loves his kid. He's going to try and do right by him.
Like, basically, in this episode, he's leaving his kid to be minded by the neighbor while he has some errands to run. He's like, I got lots of shit to do and I got to raise a kid. So, yeah, he's having work-life balance kind of issues, which that's a thing that parents have too. Yeah, it feels kind of real, despite him being a cartoon, silly, slow-talking animal, you know.
What's real is that just zoom out at the end of this, which felt like the longest fucking 30 seconds of my life or whatever it was. It's just sticking a knife in me with every syllable.
And yeah, like you said, Brian, it's showing like this is Raccoon happily asleep on his father as a child, but he's not going to remember that.
Yes,
he's going to remember the bad time.
It's the normal Raccoon voice doing the voiceover at the end.
Yeah. He fucking remembers. Yeah. He remembers getting hit.
And it's the comparison with the Bono Chan focused episodes and what he remembers.
Oh, God. Because he always remembers something sweet and nice.
Yes.
Oh, fuck.
There you go. Oh, my favorite joke is Boss Bear going, they're so cute, I can't believe they're your kids. And the Raccoon's now going, that one's an otter.
Ooh. How generous of you, or charitable of you, to adopt this young otter into your family.
I don't know why they've not done any Raccoon's Mum episodes in this version. Maybe.
I mean, like, they hit you pretty hard in this one. Maybe they're saving it for an even harder fucking hitting Raccoon Chan. I don't know.
See, I know that she's left home. I don't know why she's left home.
I don't fucking know why she's left home. It's the dead.
Well, she may... Yeah, I don't know whether that is the case.
Okay, fair enough.
I believe she occasionally comes back home, you see, in the...
it's more like a divorced couple or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I've no idea. I've not seen any episodes yet of the first series with her in. My feeling is that like she overly mothers Raccoon. I think that's what I got from the description.
Okay.
So then that embarrasses him, but I could be wrong. Okay, that's one trauma over with. Now let's get on to the items of a dying old man. Gegege no Kitaro, episode 41, Enigma, the Bakezori Rebellion.
Oh boy. Look, hey guys, we get it. We know fucking Marie Kondo's fucking thing came out. I'm not sure this is a response to that, but you can certainly read it that
this,
way.
Like, don't throw away your old shit. It's too fucking important. This shoe! This was my father's shoe! You know, that's what it's fucking like. It's like the complete fucking opposite.
I was feeling personally attacked because I do get like a little bit that way. I'm so bad for trying to move things out of my wardrobe because I would think, oh, but someone like bought me this shirt for my birthday or something like that, so I don't want to get rid of it.
You have
a good
memory invested, even though you never fucking wear that or whatever. Yeah.
But still, that's remind me. I said that's that fucking just that sense memory embedded in it. I said, no, I can't. It's when God help me when fucking the day I fucking die, which hopefully is a little long way away, and someone's gotta clear out my house. It's like, oh,
I've gathered so much fucking detritus around me, and fucking I gotta move soon, and I know it's like, well, that'll be a good time to get rid of it. And I was like, but will I though? Would I just pack it away and move it with me? To be put away, to be moved to the next place after.
Will I be entombed with us, please?
What you do, Dwayne, is you sell it on eBay and then get it to escape from the new owner's house and run back to you.
Perfect. Yeah. That's the solution. I mean, like, that also solves a bit of money wars, so claim it's like a famous shoe. Yeah, that'll do it.
So basically, this old man's moving out of his house, and we learn later he's to go to a hospice.
Yeah. Like, you figure that's what it is, because, like, his kid is still living there, isn't he?
Yes.
Because it's a house on top of a shop.
I mean, I just thought it was, like, an old person's home, but no, it's a hospice by the time we get to the end.
It's clearly
an end-of-life hospice is where he's at. And he sort of accidentally throws out his box of belongings, and they feel unwanted, because they're so loved, they have become yokai. And so, Nozomi Otoko takes advantage of their grief.
Well, he was in the bins at the time.
Yes, to run a scam. He explains that humans are greedy.
That reveal was really good, because
With the yokai arm coming out of the shoe and everything was great.
We saw that in the cold open. It was like, oh, there's the arm coming out of one bin bags, and then you expect that to happen again, but it's just fucking frat men busted out. Can't believe you threw all that food out. It was delicious. We're gonna fucking ruin everything, you piece of shit.
Yeah. But he's got a great eBay scam, like you said. I'll claim it's the famous shoe of an actor in a role he played. Yes. Sell it to some super fan who's gonna like rub it on her face really grossly. It's like
smell it.
I can smell him. You know, and then it'll pop out of the drawer she has it kept in to smell. And come back to him, and he'll just set it on again as some other famous shoe, I guess.
What must Bakazuri have made of that? Being subjected to that, this fucking crazy lady fucking rubbing her face all over me.
Just wants to be loved and also fuck over humans, so yes. Win-win.
Well, yes, until it's all going well, until a headline appears in the news sites. Bizarre, flashlight exceeds speed limit on road.
The cops are trying to pull him over. And I love the flashlight, who's barely a character. It was like, must have been one of you guys. fucking wonderful.
So Kitaro is assigned by his dad to investigate. Their problem is that some of the items don't want to return because they're actually being used and loved.
Yeah, the cop has like an existential crisis at one of their parties from coming back from eBay auctions.
Drinks
the cop's
too much,
like, I just want to be a cop, man.
What's the point?
I love the fact that it like, yeah, it had a little fucking cup. And I was like, the cup has a cup. Fucking.
It's a cap off a Coke bottle.
Oh, dear. Is that loved?
And then Nozomi Otoko sells the Bakizore to Rodriguez BB, the famous artist, for, is it like ¥1,000,000 or something? Or ¥1,000,000?
Yeah, he pays a ridiculous amount for it.
But he fails
he eats old straw.
He fails to notice the related links in that this guy believes in yokai and makes art out of junk antique straw. And so it becomes a horror show where the monster is the one who's trapped inside a torturer's dungeon as this guy realizes that this is a yokai and he's going to cut him up with a big pair of shears and turn him into art. And he realizes all the straw around him, they were yokai as well.
It's nailed to the walls. Ugh. It's like the fucking serial killers with fucking... Not even like that. There actually is like a fucking string of dolls hanging from their necks by the ceiling.
Yeah. I mean, like he has them chained. I mean, like, it's probably like a manacle, but for him, like it's a full body manacle. And he, like some of the straw things are like cut in half or something so that he just cut them until they ghost died, until there wasn't enough of their body left, that kind of thing. And then he's like, well, I don't need the rest of this corpse. It's only useful to him while they're inverted commas alive. It's horrible. Yeah.
But then he escapes by growing immensely large and chases down the sun. Meanwhile, round the corner, Kitaro and Nekomusame are questioning Nozomi Otoko. Again, very poor hiding of his crimes by listing things under BBB yet again.
Mm-hmm. I did like the fact that like a lot of Nekomatsume's thing seems to be like she just is fucking internet savvy. So she's like, dude, I can just check your fucking sales logs here. I can see the poor reviews. It's like, fuck, Shu came alive and ran away.
Get this off, man. Mana taught me how to use Yelp, so you're fucked now.
yeah, basically that. It's great. But that's how it gets caught.
I do love about this episode is it's one of these ones where humans are completely nonchalant about the existence of yokai.
The son's initially like, oh fuck, sorry, I didn't know you were a magic shoe. I knew you were a shoe, but...
Now, it does seem to play fast and loose with the whole, like, of course, it would have been revealed to the country at large that yokai exists during the fucking Tanuki uprising. So,
this is maybe a thing like, that, yeah, it's sometimes covered up and sometimes is reported on the news that a flashlight broke the speed limit.
It's fast and loose in the comic as well. That's why I like it. I do like it a lot, though, when everyone seems to know about it.
Hmm.
And when, like, humans are doing deals with yokai knowingly, or when the Prime Minister calls up Kitaro to ask them to help out on something.
Are you a bad enough dude to say to the President?
Hmm.
And to which Kitaro is quite like, well, if we had rights, yeah, I might be.
Playing it political.
Well, yes. I think Shigeru Mizuki was at that thing in those stories.
I think he was always political.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, have you seen his World War II comics?
Hmm.
The son's like, no, I was coming back here to find you guys because I realized I'd accidentally thrown you out in the trash.
His dad basically left them not in a box because, as he says later, he'd intended for a friend to come pick them up. So he didn't pack them away to put into storage or to be settled on or put in the dump, that kind of thing. These were the things he left out of boxes were the most precious things to him. And obviously the son was like, oh, you didn't put any of these boxes, put them in the bin.
And then they spend the next 5 minutes wringing out every possible tear they can from your body.
Pretty much.
The old man looks back upon his life with these crying inanimate objects. And then that final scene where they're all in the bed together with him being hugged.
Yeah.
He's hugging all his old junk that he loves. I mean, the shoe has particular significance to him,
yes,
obviously.
It's the faces he doesn't of all get the to... other ones as well.
Yeah, I mean, that guitar is fucking very upset.
Yeah, at this point, yeah, that's going to be fucking me in my deathbed as well. it is really cut to the core of my very being. It's like, oh, this has got my number, and it's fucking ringing it off the hook now.
Because I see people compare it to the end of Toy Story 3, but no, this is worse, because Toy Story 3 is all about growing up. This is about you dying.
This is, like, Toy Story 3 is hopeful, because they have, like, existence beyond this, because they've fulfilled their duty, in a sense. So they've, like, helped usher this young man from his boyhood to his adolescence, and now he's fine now. He's going to be okay. It's okay to just kind of go on and pass him on to another thing. And now they can do the same for that other little girl that got left at the end of that film. So it's going to be okay.
Yeah, but I mean, the shoe's like, I just want to spend as much time with you as possible, old man. The old man's like, I'm literally in my deathbed.
This would be like if Toy Story 4 involves the toys trying to get back to Andy as he's like in his deathbed.
That'd be a one-for-one comparison. Yeah, sure. Oh, dear.
And who knows? Who knows?
Also, this one should test, like, you know, one third at a time. So if I ever got time for Toy Story 3, you can just watch this and you're all set.
Yep. I'm now fully on board with this ending theme as well, by the way. I really like it.
I quite like this.
It's certainly, like, I needed the kind of upbeatness after this.
Yes.
It did kind of barge in suddenly at that fucking rat man again, ruining the moment. Like, you always do with everything in your life.
Suku Megami, that's the type of thing they are, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, it fits as well, because it's like, if the old man's like, he's had that since he was a kid, and it belonged to his dad, that shoe could easily be 100 years old, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And
I think it's 100 years or something.
Yeah, because the shoe ends up in the folklore museum and the penknife, the kettle and the guitar and whatever else not everything made it back to see him. Cause...
Well, some of them found homes that they were quite happy with. Yes. The cup was kind of like, fuck off, I'm a cup now.
Yeah. People are drinking out of me. It's great.
People are drinking out of me and rubbing me against their face.
They love it.
It was a hot drink, though. Maybe it was cold out. I don't
know. Most action I've gotten in years.
The thing out of Short Piece is about those as well, isn't it? The one which got Oscar
nominated. Possessions.
Yeah. And there's that show I watched the first episode of that I quite liked, where they send them out to investigate. Can't remember what it's called now. It's where they
rent Phoebe's Playhouse.
Yeah, that's the one. Phoebe's Playhouse on Crunchyroll.
What? The chair's alive?
That's a bit more like Cake Island than this. Oh yeah, I watched the episode of One Piece as well.
Ah, fuck. I saw the animation. I forgot to actually watch it in the end.
That's the end of the fucking Karakuri fight, is it?
Yes, yeah. I hadn't realised until that point that it was actually your boy doing his voice as well, Joseph Joestar.
Oh, you got fucking, what the, obviously, young Joestar, is it?
Yeah,
young Joestar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, of course, because fucking,
let's not even
stops,
fucking,
passed away.
Yeah. Well, and this was like recorded ages ago,
he's
but
alive.
Yeah.
He's alive in my heart.
Yeah. Also, it's like, they're not even trying to make the one-to-one like, it's like, oh, is he kind of like Joseph Joestar? It's like, no, he is literally young Joseph Joestar.
There's probably enough people pointed it out, just like online.
I mean, it was obvious.
We can't not do this now, man. We have to.
Yeah. And now you're going to say, and he's standing there with that haircut and wearing a scarf around his face.
And being fabulous. Yeah, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, it was obvious. But no, that episode's great. What else me and Niall watched something. I don't know if you watched this, Dwayne.
Oh.
A little thing called Dragon Ball Super Broly.
Oh, give us the short rundown.
I'll give a short rundown because I've already recorded an hour and a half long podcast about it.
Yeah, I don't want to take from that, exactly.
It's fucking amazing. It's bonkers. Wait. It's surreal.
Okay.
It's a film where half the film is one fight.
Nice.
It's just like wall to wall. It's the first like half hour or so is where the majority of the kind of jokes and things are, but also get a lot of sort of backstory regarding the Saiyan planet.
Yeah, but the first half is Dragon Ball minus the extra chapter he did in 2014.
It's kind of see like when King Cole decided to hand off the reins to his little boy Frieza, and how fucking Frieza just takes charge from day one, even though he's only like 4 feet tall. And we get a little bit of like, I kind of liked how it worked in a lot of little cameos in there, because you see like Raditz in there as a kid, because they're off on a mission that's how they survived that whole thing. See Nappa with hair. It's amazing.
Wow. Oh, I'm sold with Nappa hair, yeah.
Yeah, and the funny stuff is really funny. It's the reason why the film is happening is ridiculous.
Like, will it make me like Broly as a concept? Because
yes,
I generally don't.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
That's fine. That's pretty much, like, that's the key for me.
There's bits of his original origin, but a lot of the old origin is just completely thrown out.
Good. A lot of that was bollocks, so.
Yeah, still like from the big shouty guy. He's more like, I don't know, a fucking caveman. Kind of literally, because he's survived as long as the whole thing. He was stranded on a planet, like, with his dad and other dudes, and they had to kind of survive as best they could. So, you kind of, they meet him again. He's kind of wearing the pelt of this beast that he slew, and is wearing around his neck, wearing around his kind of waist.
He didn't slay it.
Oh, wait, no, he has to slay it, no.
He's Tarzan, basically, now.
Yeah.
Okay.
If Tarzan's dad was a jerk. It's great, and yeah, it's definitely worth seeing on the big screen for the fight, which takes up half the film. Because I think the end of Spider-Verse was oversold to me as being like psychedelic.
I tried to like go down from like the people's expectations of it. I just enjoyed the whole movie. So,
It's psychedelic in one part, but it is just surreal. Just the amount of punching you see happen with it. The only thing I can compare it to is Blade 2, because that's a film where the only time they stop fighting is halfway through the film where they reload.
Kind of like when things it's setting up as well, because there's going to be more things coming down the line. I really liked how part of the solution for making Broly a sympathetic character as well is that they, much like Goku got a bomb, they're going to give Broly a space bomber. Who's going to mind him?
Which everyone is horny for. But to be fair, she's also horny for Broly, so that's fine.
Yeah. But she's great. And
she is
the old
great.
Fella. And the old fella who's with them is really good too.
Well. He's also voiced by your fella who does Joseph Joestar.
And there are a few guys as well in Frieza's inner circle. A very menacing old lady was floating around. It's like, oh, she's got something else going on, which I hope will be elaborated on.
Our theory, if you listen to our Dynamite in the Brain episode, is that she was Frieza's nanny, maybe. Maybe she was like the one who raised him instead of his actual father.
Yeah.
If they bring like Frieza's mam into it, like they'll be like defanging Frieza with kind of like they've done to Vegeta and shit. And I'm like, I'm 100% on board.
Oh yeah, don't worry, Frieza is defanged in this film.
Excellent.
He's being absolute slimy gish.
That just sounds like his usual shtick, though.
Oh no! The entire I'm not gonna spoil it, but the entire motivation for the film happening is Frieza being petty on a level unforeseen.
That's impressive for him. Yeah.
And as well, what he does, like, well, that's the impetus for it. It's fucking heinous because why spend his fees in the film? As well, they kind of need him power through the film to stall for time while they do something else. And Joe's like, you're kind of going, hang in there, Frieza, just a little longer.
Okay.
Yeah, there's points where Goku's like, well, he did help us save the universe. but you get a sense of difference in Frieza's personality following the
tournament
of power. And difference in his approach. And the end of the film is basically, stay tuned for more Dragon Ball Super.
Yay!
Perfect. Yeah, okay.
Because it sets up all sorts of nice new things. And, they keep on mentioning Tarble in these films, but not by name. I don't know whether that's just an in-joke that Toriyama's doing, or whether they'll eventually have Tarble. And, who knows, maybe when they didn't have the new series, he'll finally go and meet the king of the Saiyans from the other universes he keeps on promising to. Maybe that'll turn out to be Tarble. I still need to see that OVA with Tarble in, because I think that's probably arguably where this new tone of Dragon Ball starts.
I'm just hearing about this guy now.
he's Vegeta's other brother. He's Vegeta's brother, who they briefly mention in this film. And they briefly mention in Battle of Gods as being someone they could get to help do the Super Saiyan God. And he's in one OVA.
Sounds like one of those guys who was like sort of just made up by somebody else. Like, well, did you know that Darth Vader had a secret apprentice that he didn't know about until this thing came out? And he's super strong, even stronger than Darth Vader. And
this is the opposite though.
I may have heard this before, but then dismissed it as some malarkey like that.
Was this the guy who was with, he's hanging out with Bulma's sister or something?
No, that's
Jacob.
No, I thought there was another Saiyan hanging out with someone, but I couldn't think if it was Bulma's sister. No, yeah, you're right. Exactly. That one is Jacko. Yeah.
Tarble's got a wife who's like a weird white blob woman, and he's like a really wimpy Saiyan.
Yeah, that does sound really familiar. Okay.
Which makes me think it was a Toriyama idea, because he wrote the script for that. So yes, it's a Toriyama idea.
Okay.
Because that feels like the current Dragon Ball Super type of Toriyama ideas that he's throwing around for Dragon Ball, i.e. not taking it 100% seriously.
Well, that's the right way.
It is the right way, yes.
Mm.
And also, it strikes me as is exactly like Dragon Ball Minus, of like adding things to the backgrounds of the Saiyans which weren't there before.
It really fleshes them out better. Yeah, yeah.
Well, also retcons things like
things that were crap. Yeah.
Yes, like changed Goku's age.
Mm, yeah. But that's so we could more. Let's go more pointedly sell that little fucking Superman getting blasted off the planet moment they have at the end.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, I hadn't realised the brother had been introduced already until I looked at it when I got home. Then I was like, oh, how do I see that OVA? I have still no idea. Because I was like, oh, I bet that's like blooming. He'd be the havoc to Vegeta's Cyclops, wouldn't he? If Trunks is Cable. Of course.
Oh, Jesus.
Right, yeah, before I hear more of my thoughts, this episode of Dynamite in the Brain that's out the very same day this episode comes out.
Hmm.
But yeah, I'll see if Broly's still out, if they've added more dates to it, though.
I think so, because I just tried to look up Tarble there, and then in relation to that, and then, oh yeah, there seems to be still some screenings of it happening.
Okay.
In places. So yeah, try a local cinema today. Yeah, I still got showings today, showings tomorrow even still, yeah.
Hmm.
Let's see what's now it's on. Yep, it's on all this weekend here, yeah, it's on everywhere. And the better map we're on regular consecutive days.
Sure, it must be well enough then, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like, well, what was this? I think in Ireland, the UK at least, it's the third best opening for an anime film.
Wow. Pretty good.
Righty-ho. That wraps everything up for this week on Let's Go JoJo. Be back here next week for Babyface. And in the meantime, check out our regular podcast at SecretOfTheSailorMadness.com and DynamiteInTheBrain.com. Goodbye.
Bye.
Arrivederci.